A warm up from below. Welcome to lovely Las Vegas for Cusco Soups with myself, Greg Oops Peterson, now part of the VSIN Family Podcast. We've got an excellent podcast for you. Here in this segment, we're going to be chatting with our good friend Ryan McIntyre, who does such great work over at the Sports Gambling Podcast Network. We're going to preview the Final Four with him, get a little bit of crown action because he also does some West Virginia work. He does the Ryan and Rush show that is all dedicated to taking a look at West Virginia athletics. So we have to take a look at those games, and he is currently in Indianapolis. So we'll get a boots on the ground look at just which fan bases have come out the most thus far, who might have a little bit of home court advantage, get his thoughts on both of those games. And then in the final segment, going to get you guys picks and analysis on both ground games and the Final Four games as we hit some bank shots. If you have a question, comment, segment idea, what have you for this podcast, you'll find it two ways we offer those in. First one is my Twitter /xtimeline at gunet_81. Keep in mind, letters CM, they mean does not matter. So as per usual, please do send these into the timeline. The other way is find an Apple Podcast review. If you rate this podcast 5 stars, it is very much appreciated. From there, you're able to fire in whatever you'd like to hear on this podcast via that 5-star review. While I did not get in any Twitter /X questions today, I do want to relay to you a few pieces of news that we saw in college basketball before we do talk with our good friend Ryan McIntyre. And it does appear as though Congress is going to be passing jurisdiction with regards to what we're going to be getting in college basketball, as Donald Trump signed an executive order on Friday limiting how long athletes can play college sports for. Apparently, you need to complete your years within a 5-year time span, and you get one free transfer, and then after that, you have to sit out with penalty. So it's going to be very interesting. There are some people are saying that this is going to be ruled unconstitutional. There's probably going to be a bunch of injunctions, things of that nature. So it is going to be very, very interesting. This would not take effect until August 2nd. So these guys have transferred multiple times. I don't know if they get like grandfathered in or something like that. That's something that needs to be sorted out, and we're going to be finding out more and more about this moving forward. I do college basketball for a living. I do not read these like 74-page documents or anything like that. I am going to let the legal experts be able to dive in on that. I very much stick to college basketball, like handicapping college basketball. So I am not going to be telling you what is / is not going to be happening. I do think that we probably don't want guys playing at 5 different schools in 5 different years and everything like that, but at the same time, I do think that there could be some issues that pop up, and I know that they were trying to attack some of these like NIL collectives as well, which I think that that's the biggest thing of this, because the reason why 100 million billion players enter into the transfer portal every single offseason is because they're looking for more money from a different NIL collective, and that's something that needs to be ironed out. I know that they address it in some way here. I don't know what it all boils down to. Again, I'm not going to pretend to be the Mona Lisa Vito of reading over government documents or anything like that, because I am not. I very, very much am not. I went to college for radio, TV, film because I didn't want to do stuff like this. So, but here we are. Sometimes it's just absolutely unavoidable when you've got government, shall we say, documents going into college basketball. So here we are. But that said, I am not sure exactly if this is going to be constitutional or not. I'm not sure if this is going to be truly taking effect. I'm sure that there's going to be a lot of pushback on it. And I will keep you guys abreast of this on this podcast. I'm going to bring on people that know more about this than I do, because I am a nota thing when it comes to these documents. But I'm just relaying the news that we did see in college basketball on Friday. But I do think that it probably would be a few steps in the right direction. Would like to see if there's like cause for the transfer, that a guy gets awarded that, like not just because, oh, I wanted more NIL money, but actually I wanted to be able to complete an actual degree or something like that. So we shall see what's going to be happening on that front. And then this came out as well. It appears the NCAA leadership is expected to finalize an expansion of the men's and women's NCAA tournament for next year to 76 teams. Those of you guys listening to this podcast, I think 99% of you agree with me. We had a tough time finding 68 teams for this year in the NCAA tournament, and a lot of people will say, oh, it will make it easier for Miami of Ohio to get in. Do you really think that they're going to do that? Do you really think they're going to be like, oh, we're going to lower Miami of Ohio? Tulsa, you got screwed. We're going to put in Tulsa. We're going to put in Stone Cold Stephen F. Austin. We're going to reward these teams that won. No, they're going to put in the mediocre power conference teams, and we're going to get a bunch of slop. Like, Auburn is going to be safely in the field. They're going to be campaigning for some team that lost like 14 games in Big Ten conference play. We all know that this is going to happen. Like, don't lie to yourself and be like, oh, they're going to help out the little guy here. We're going to try to get more mid-majors in the NCAA tournament.
it wrong. They're not gonna do that. I can guarantee you this. There's very few things in life that are a lock. This is a stone cold lead pipe lock of the century. They are not gonna do this to help out the little guys. They are not gonna be doing this to be like, oh, let's make sure that Miami of Ohio gets into the NCAA tournament. No, they're gonna be trying to protect, oh, you're a mediocre power conference team. Well, we'll just let you weasel your way into the NCAA tournament. Have fun in Dayton. So that's exactly what's going to be happening there. So hopefully you enjoyed that diatribe that I went in on there, and it's going to be creating a much, much sloppier product. And for those of us that love filling out the bracket, well, it's now going to be more and more convoluted. So that's what we saw in college basketball on Friday. And now how about if we do chat it up with our good friend as Ryan McIntyre. He does such great work over at the Sports Gambling Podcast Network. Mentioned it, he does a Ryan Rush show involving West Virginia athletics, and he and Kobe Dant do the show The College Experience that looks at all college sports, not just college basketball. But when things are done here, he is going to be taking a look at college baseball, college football, and so much more. And here at Buffum on the old Twitter /X at Moneyline_MacSpelt M-A-C on Mac. And Ryan, it's always a pleasure, my friend. Thank you.
Greg, appreciate you having me. Coming to you live from Indy right now, boots on the ground.
Absolutely. I love it. And just what has been the vibe around Indianapolis been for this Final Four? Because in my opinion, you've got one de facto title game in Arizona versus Michigan. And then in the other game, Illinois versus UConn. Not to say that these teams are chopped liver, but whoever wins this game is going to be an underdog. But both teams have great stories on how they were able to get to this Final Four.
I think everybody kind of agrees. I think it's kind of become a little bit of a public narrative that definitely the two best teams are in the second matchup. But the other two teams, I think, are really good too, and they could pose some issues for Arizona or Michigan depending on who wins that game. Obviously UConn, they just continue to find ways to win games in this tournament under Dan Hurley, and then Illinois with their versatility offensively. So looking forward to seeing how these games play out. I think we're gonna have a fun night here in Indianapolis.
Oh, I do think so as well. And I mean, when you take a look at the first game right now, UConn is at 1.5, 2-point underdog. How do you take a look at this? Because with Illinois, they do have a little bit more length than UConn, but they also take many more threes in what is now a converted football stadium. And for UConn, you just mentioned it with Dan Hurley and company, it just feels like this guy gets a job done in every single NCAA tournament game.
He does. I mean, what, 17-1 now? ETS, especially when he gets passed around to 32, he's pretty much automatic. I think I'm going to go against a lot of people here, and I'm going to take Illinois. I know they played earlier in the year, but that game was at the Garden. Then they played a couple years ago in the Elite Eight where they got run off the floor, but that game was in Boston. I think that the Illinois faithful finally has a chance to kind of take over this as a home game. I mean, boots on the ground here. This is going to be a heavy Illini crowd. UConn will travel, obviously, with it being a proud program, but I just think Illinois, with that size, versatility, they have more explosive players. That almost was a kitchen sink game, UConn against Duke, the way they won that game, came all the way back. They're also coming off the Sparty emotional physical game, and UCLA was a physical game. And heck, even St. John's in the Big East Championship where they lost, they're going to run out of gas finally. But they will go out swinging if they do go down.
Yep, that is going to be a very fun one. And with Illinois, how big is it that they do just have so much size with the Avisic brothers, with having David Mirkovic? Because that's one of the biggest, if not the biggest, roster in all of college basketball.
I think it definitely poses issues for UConn because UConn's not the biggest team. I mean, I know Terrence Reed gets a lot done for how tough he is and just how he can dominate a game if you don't double him. But I think UConn's guards are going to struggle in this game against all that size against Illinois.
Absolutely. I think that is going to be a fun game. And then we mentioned it. It feels like the de facto title game is going to be game number two between Arizona and Michigan, with Michigan right now that very, very slim favorite. That total is 157.5. How do you look at this game? Because I feel like you could make such a great argument for either team. I feel like, I mean, just based on the metrics themselves, either the top two teams remaining in all of college basketball. And I don't think that I can fault anyone for going one way or the other in this game, though I personally did land on Arizona.
Yeah, I think both teams are awesome, to your point. I think they've been the two best teams. I'm still kind of confused at how Duke got the number one overall seed over Arizona. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to lie, with how many great wins Arizona had. But instead, now we get this matchup in the semifinal instead of the national championship. It comes down to me. I think Arizona at their best is better than Michigan at their best. I think both teams are going to play well. Both teams are well coached. We saw Tommy Lloyd come back. But I trust the guards more. I trust Jaden Bradley more. I think both front courts can neutralize each other with all their size and physicality and versatility. But in the end, I like Jaden Bradley to be the X factor, control the game. And I just think Arizona is a little more battle-tested coming out of the Big 12, sweeping Houston, sweeping Iowa State, going to UConn in the non-con, beating Alabama, Auburn, Arkansas. They've beaten who's who at Utah State, who won 30 games. I just think Arizona is a little bit – has one more gear than Michigan, and I think that they will be playing Monday night against Illinois.
Now, the one thing I did disagree with you on is that I actually feel like at their best, Michigan might be a little bit better than Arizona. But the reason why I landed on Arizona is it feels like they've been a little bit more consistent this year as well. I'm not sure if you gauge that, but it felt like Michigan had a lot of fumbles during Big Ten play. It feels like sometimes it's a little bit touch and go with them. And for Arizona, I don't think that really, other than playing against Kansas, where they're 41-0 on Big Monday, they really haven't had an off game all season.
And my point with the at their best, I think that second half against Purdue kind of sums up Arizona, where they didn't play well that game, and then they still had another gear in that second half where you spot Purdue, what, 9 points? And Braden Smith, Matt Painter, and how good they've been over the last 4 or 5 years, you're losing that game. They went out and just beat them by 20 in the second half. So I just think, to your point, there's not many weaknesses at all with Arizona. I know people will point that they don't make a lot of threes, but they don't really need to. They just dominate you and suffocate you at the rim. So yeah, I agree, they've been more consistent, and I think they have another gear.
Yep, I do think that that's going to be a fun one. I landed on Arizona as well as Ryan McIntyre, who does such great work over at the Sports Gambling Podcast Network, is joining me on Coast to Coast Hoops. And hey, you do the Ryan and Rush show as well, that's dedicated to West Virginia athletics. And West Virginia is still playing college basketball on Final Four weekend, yeah. Even though it's the Final Four of a very, very different tournament in the Crown right now. They're about a 1-point favorite against Creighton. How do you take a look at this sort of a game? Because I'm sure that Russ Hodge wants to be able to build up his program, be able to go out on a high note. And then for Greg McDermott, this is going to be his last really tour of duty with Creighton. He's stepping down after this season. I think it's a really interesting game, and it almost feels very bizarre that this game is being played hours before the Final Four.
It's dumb, to be honest, Greg, that they're playing it at 4 o'clock when the games tip at 6. I mean, if this game goes over,
it's complete into the Final Four game.
Yeah, I don't understand this.
They did the same stupid thing last year, too.
Why couldn't they play this Friday night? It makes absolutely no sense. Kudos to the NIT, by the way, and D2 and D3 for diving into Easter Sunday. I think they're going to get a really good number playing the NIT Championship Sunday night primetime of Easter. The opposite could be said for the Crown. I don't get what this is. I'm going to be on my Mountaineers. I think that they are the better team. I know you have the McDermott get-up spot, play for the coach. But I think the Mountaineers have been playing the better basketball, more battle-tested coming out of the Big 12 versus Big East. And they got their scare out of the way. They did not play well against Stanford, but still found a way to win.
Yeah, and man, I had Stanford -1. You want to talk about up-chucking defeat from the jaws of victory. How do you intentionally foul up 3 points while a guy is taking a three-point shot? My gosh.
Well, if you ask some people, it's impossible to lose when you foul up three.
You have to do it right. You have to do it before he crosses half court, so that way they can't throw up a shot.
You have to practice it.
Oh, like that was just so badly botched. I get the idea there, but I mean, after a few dribbles, you have to let it go, and you just have to play it out because they could launch it any time. Honor Huff very smartly launches up the three. It's all three free throws, and for Stanford, their season's done. They lost out on a little bit of NIL money, so world's smallest violin there. But man, that was wild to say the least. And how much do you take a look at some of these smaller events in terms of being able to build for the next season? Because we do see time and time again, these teams that make a run in the NIT, these teams that make a run in the Crown, be able to, the next season, have themselves a pretty solid year. And I know that a lot of people are going to be looking at these games as a throwaway, but I think that these are actually quite meaningful for these programs, especially with not a lot of guys opting out of these games this year.
Yeah, as Nebraska and UCF, I think both those teams played in the Crown Championship last year, and they parlayed that into some momentum coming into this year. Nebraska having a great year. They started 20-0, and then obviously UCF getting back to the dance in the Big 12. So yeah, I think you definitely can get some momentum out of this. It doesn't automatically relate to success, but I do think that it's positive to go out the right way and finish the season strong.
Yep, I'm right there with you. And certainly, if you're a team like Oklahoma, you're going to be losing Nigel Pack, most likely Xavier Brown, a lot of those guys. So maybe it means a little bit less to them. But a team that might have a lot of younger players like Nebraska did last season, that was absolutely massive for them. And Ryan, I do want to ask you about this as well, because we've seen a lot of coaching hoopla here in the offseason. And I'm sure we're going to be talking about the transfer portal soon, the 100 million billion guys. We're going to avoid that for right now, because it would be easier to make a list of the guys that don't enter in the transfer portal rather than the guys that do. So we're going to let that play out. But that said, how have you taken a look at the coaching carousel this offseason? Because I feel like there have been some curious moves, like Justin Gainey going on over to NC State, Ryle Norred going back to Butler. I don't know if I love those moves with the team bringing on their, and I quote, guy that was an alma mater. Meanwhile, some of these teams, like a Utah State bringing in Ben Jacobson, I thought that they had a home run with that hire.
Love Jacobson. And I think Utah State might finally get a little bit of stability and maybe a guy that'll stay more than a year. I mean, we saw how long is he at Northern Iowa? 20 years? So
yep.
I'd be a little surprised if he's one and
done. And hey, even with all the coaches, Utah State finds a way to win every year.
No doubt. I like that one. I like the alma mater when they return home. And personally, like you, I'm sure you pull for those stories, but it doesn't always translate to success and winning, especially when they haven't been head coaches at the Division I level.
Yeah, I mean, it's very curious what we're going to be getting out of Justin Gainey, a longtime assistant, but never has been in that chair. Now he gets a power conference job. Same goes for Ronald Norad, who I remember him on those Butler Final Four teams. So that's a lot of fun. And what's always a lot of fun is chatting it up with you, Ryan. You do such great work looking at this great game of college basketball, but I know you're transitioning into college baseball. Spring games and college football are going down. You and Kobe Dant do an incredible job on it all. So love to get people at home know it's all on tap for you and how people can follow along on social media and other platforms.
Appreciate it, Greg. Yeah, at @Moneyline_Mac for my personal. And then, yeah, go check out the College Experience year-round. We break down every game, all sports. Yeah, always appreciate you having me, Greg.
Always fun to have Ryan aboard every single time he joins me. He lends such great insights and did so once again today. So big thanks to Ryan for joining me on Cuts to Cuffs Heaps, now part of the VSIN family of podcasts. Coming up next, I'm going to get you guys picks and analysis on the Final Four and the Crown Final Four, all four games, as we hit some big shots. Side edges college basketball season? Well, VSiN experts use CBB Analytics, the most comprehensive college basketball analytics platform in the world. See injury impact on and off data, clutch time performance metrics, first versus second half splits, and so much more. Utilize the promo code of VSiN, that is VSIN, to get $30 off and find your betting edge over at CBBAnalytics.com. That is CBBAnalytics, all one word, .com. For anyone that is new to VSIN, well, I wish you a friendly hello. This is an attention to anyone that is new to VSIN, because you're able to get some free stuff with our daily newsletter. It's a great way to catch up on everything that's happening in the sports betting world. It's delivered straight to your inbox every single morning. VSIN's newsletter offers picks, data, strategies for the day's betting menu, and so much more. Sign up for free today over at VSIN.com/newsletter. That's VSIN.com/newsletter, and start receiving your free newsletter tomorrow morning. That is VSIN.com/newsletter. Stay ahead of the game and bet smarter with VSIN. And we're back here in lovely Las Vegas for Cuscus Hoops with myself, Greg Hoops Peterson, now part of the VSIN family of podcasts. It is always a pleasure to be joined by Ryan McIntyre, who does such great work over at the Sports Gambling Podcast Network and the College Experience, taking a look at this great game that we all know and love of college basketball, and does a great job once college basketball season is done, looking at baseball, football, and so much more. Every single time he joins me, lends such great insights, and did so once again today. So big thanks to Ryan for joining me in the last segment. Now it is that time of the podcast to give you picks and analysis on all four games on the betting board for this college basketball Saturday, as we hit some bank shots.
Most financial establishments close at a certain time, but not here. It is time for a side and total on every game on today's betting board bank shots.
Do note that, as per usual, any changes that are made to these plays will be listed up on my Twitter/X feed @GNet_D1. We're going to be going with the two crown games first, and then the two NCAA tournament final four games are going to be at the bottom. That'll keep things all nice and clean and easy. Let's get things started with 6:45, 6:46. It's Oklahoma, and they're going to be playing against Baylor here from T-Mobile Arena in lovely Las Vegas. Oklahoma, 1-1.5 point favorite. Totals between 157.5 to 159, and 158.5 or less. And on the over semi-total at a 159, you've got two teams that have not really played a lot of defense thus far this season, as both of these teams are outside the top 230 in terms of points allowed on a per-possession basis. Oklahoma entered into the day on Wednesday prior to their first-round game, about 176 in terms of total possessions per game. That rose because they played an overtime game. But I mean, overall, this is an offense that has been able to do a pretty functional job. They're a top 50 team in terms of taking care of the ball. If you look at them in terms of points scored on a per possession basis, it's an Oklahoma team that has been a top 50 team all season long, and for Baylor, they're built around being able to grab second and third chances. They are 17th in the country with grabbing about 35% of their missed shots as an offensive rebound, and overall Baylor has been 44th in the country in terms of points scored on a per possession basis. Oklahoma quite a bit better than that at 20th, and Oklahoma has been okay down low, top 55 team with regards to opponents' 2-point shooting percentage and games played away from home. Both of these teams, by the way, really didn't have any opt-outs. You've got Nigel Pack, Xavier Brown on the side of Oklahoma, who've been able to combine for about 32 points per game. Pack has been able to pack it in, shooting 44% from three-point range. These two guys give you about 6.3 assists per contest. Mohamed Wagyu is able to give you about 7 or so rebounds. And Tate Davis has been versatile, 12.5 points, 5.5 rebounds per game. So love what these guys are able to bring to the table. And then on the flip side for Baylor, they just don't really have a lot of depth in general. The guys that they do have are solid, though. Tunde Yusufu has been able to give this team double figures, serves in there about 6 boards, 2 steals to go along with his 18 points per game, but hasn't really been a great three-point shooter. But you don't need that when you've got Isaac Williams shooting 49% for three with about 10 points per contest. Cam Akar really drives this team, 19 points, 5.5 boards. But for this Baylor squad, they really have given it up from the outside. They're outside the top 225 in terms of opponent's three-point shooting percentage. They really don't put you under duress in terms of generating turnovers. They're about a country average team in terms of taking care of the ball, and with Oklahoma doing a better job in terms of taking care of the ball. And I do think that Oklahoma in a crunch time spot, just a little bit more trustworthy, shooting over 75% of the free throw line, more like 73.4% for Baylor, that Oklahoma gets the job done. A mulling layup to 2.5 with Oklahoma made them a 3-point favorite, and like the over, semi total 159, and then 647, 648 is West Virginia versus Creighton. Right now, West Virginia in most places a 1-1.5 point favorite. Totals anywhere between 133.5 to 134.5. Like the over, semi total 137. You do have a West Virginia defense that overall is about 27th in the country in terms of points allowed on a per possession basis, but they are giving up about 18.9 points more per 100 possessions away from home rather than at home, and it's just a shaky West Virginia offense. They're 205th in the country in terms of points scored on a per possession basis. Creighton not lighting the world on fire themselves, 141st in the country in terms of points scored on a per possession basis, and this Creighton team is not going to put you under duress. 336th in terms of turnovers generated on a per possession basis. They also don't put you on the free throw line a ton, which that actually helps out West Virginia, because West Virginia, they are currently shooting a nice hearty 68.4% of the free throw line outside the top 310 there, but on a rough, he puffs, and he finds a way to get to the free throw line because he had those three free throws that was able to send the game to overtime. 16 points per game on 35% three-point shooting. Jasper Floyd is also a 35% three-point shooter. 7 points, 3 assists, just an ace mixer and shaker for the team. Chance Moore, Brennan Lorient, they were able to combine for about 10.5 or so rebounds per game, a combined 22 points per contest. So I like what they bring to the table. And for Creighton, they've dealt with injuries to Owen Freeman throughout. He was able to play in that first round game of the crown, so nice to be able to see that. Nick Graves, Josh Dix, they've been able to combine for about 24 points per game. Looks like they're without Austin Schwartz for this event. He was dealing with injuries towards the back half of the season, but they do have a guy in Blake Harper who's been able to shoot about 36% from three-point range, and it is a Creighton team that they've been able to do an okay job down low. They're a top 130 team in terms of opponent's two-point shooting percentage, top 90 with their own two-point shooting percentage. They are well outside the top 240 in terms of opponent's three-point shooting percentage, and they don't pull in there a lot of second and third chances, but I do think that with West Virginia being so poor at the free throw line, Creighton, they're shooting 76.3% of the free throw line in a close game. Creighton does get the job done. Like right near on the money line. Keep in mind, they're playing for Coach Greg McDermott. This is going to be his last time coaching this just team in general. After this event, he steps down, Alan Huss takes over. So I like right here on the money line to get the job done for their coach, and I like the over. Semi total 137. And now we hit the two final four games, 649, 650. Illinois and Connecticut to battle. Illinois is a 1.5 to 2-point favorite. So on this game is 139.5. I do like the under. I semi total at a 137.5. Neither of these teams are going to be absolutely blazing it up and down the court. Illinois is about 300th in the country in terms of total possessions per game. UConn pretty much the exact same, 301st in terms of total possessions per game. But what I think is the X factor here is the fact that UConn does such a great job in terms of being able to guard the three-point line. They allow opponents in games played away from them to shoot just 29.3% from three-point range. That is 11th in all of college basketball. And Illinois is a team that attempts a lot of shots from three-point range. They attempt 49.8% of their field goal attempts from three. That is 15th in all of college basketball. With Connecticut, they might have a little bit of a tough time down low with the Avisich brothers being able to combine for about 11 or so rebounds per game. And then Keaton Wogler has been just so good for the team thus far this season. He's playing you with 5 boards, 4 assists, 18 points per game on 40% 3-point shooting. David Mirkovic, 8 boards. He's also a 37.5% 3-point shooter as well. But Terrace Reed rebounded Furman all by himself in the first round of the NCAA tournament. He has been masterful for this UConn team, being able to give you over 8 rebounds per game. Silas Demery has also dealt with injury throughout the NCAA tournament. He's a main facilitator, 10.5 points, 5.9 assists per game. So the week off, I think, really helps him out. Solo Ball has only shot about 30% from three. I feel like he's a little bit better than this. He's able to give you 13 points per game, though. And I do think that with the way that UConn does such a great job down low, top 25 team with regards to opponent's two-point shooting percentage, top 35 group with their own two-point shooting percentage, that they do find a way to be able to persevere, get the job done here against an Illinois team that I think is going to be a little bit off with those sight lines, even though they've been number one in the country in terms of points per possession overall this season. So set a total of a 137.5. I do like the under, and I'm going to be willing to take UConn here on the money line, made them a 1.5-point favorite. Wrap things up with 651, 652. Michigan and Arizona do battle. Arizona's 1.5-point underdog, total is 157.5. I took Arizona on the money line. These are two teams that are just so tightly knit together. One thing that did put me over the top here on Arizona is the fact that they should be able to win the turnover battle. Michigan 287th in terms of turnovers on a per possession basis generated, and on offense they're 158th in terms of turnovers per offensive play, while Arizona 43rd in terms of turnovers per offensive play. So that means more clean possessions for them. I mean, both of these teams are great. Arizona 8th in points per possession on offense, 6th in points allowed on a per possession basis on defense. Michigan 4th in terms of points per possession on offense, 8th in points allowed on a per possession basis on defense. So you're really splitting hairs there. You've got Mo Crivas along with Toby Awaka combining for 16 rebounds per game down low for Arizona. And then on the Michigan side of things, you've got a trio of different guys, Yaxel Lendeborg, Morris Johnson, Ade Mara, who are all giving at least 6.8 rebounds per game. They combine for 5 blocks per contest. So all these guys do an amazing job there. LJ Kaysen being out with an injury, I think, could hurt them a little bit here, because with Arizona, while they do have more freshmen than Michigan, you do have a guy in the backcourt in Jaden Bradley, who is a senior, 13.5 points, 4.5 assists. He's been shooting about 39.5% from three. And Arizona, in a stadium where the sight lines might be off, they don't take a lot of threes. They're a top 40 team in terms of percentage of their field goal attempts that come from 2-point range. So they looked upon the ball there. Brayden Breeze, I feel like, has been one of the most improved players in all of college basketball, stealing half, 16 points, 5 boards. He really does a little bit of everything for the team, even what you've been able to get out of Ivan Kurchevov. Hopefully I said that correct. He's been able to come in there, give you about 10.5 points per game. And then on the flip side for Michigan, obviously Elia Kadu has been very rock solid in the backcourt, 6 assists per game. But I do think that those turnovers could linger a little bit if you find yourself in a pressure spot. Michigan, they shoot 74.2% at the free throw line. Arizona 73.5%, so darn near equals there. But I do think that Arizona has just been a little bit more consistent this season. So I did give Arizona the edge of 1.5 points. I like Arizona here on the money line. And I like the under. So my total 154.5. And that'll wrap things up for the Saturday edition of Coast to Coast Hoops, now part of the VSiN Family Podcast. A big thanks to Ryan McIntyre, who does such great work over at the Sports Gambling Podcast Network, for joining me in the last segment. If you do like hearing from this fine podcast, Coast to Coast Hoops, you're able to subscribe wherever your podcast, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, and TuneIn. If you have a question, comment, segment idea, whatever, for this podcast, you have one of two ways to be able to fire those in. First one is my Twitter /XTimeline at GUnit_81. Keep in mind, the RCM, they mean does not matter. So, per usual, please do send these into the timeline. The other way is find an Apple Podcast review. If you rate this podcast 5 stars, it is very much appreciated. And then from there, you're able to fire in whatever you'd like to hear on this podcast via that 5-star review. Coming at you guys every single day with picks and analysis on every single game, every single day. And once the games are all done, looking at the transfer portal, all these offseason moves, and so much more. And I'll be back with you once again tomorrow. Thank you.